Welcome to The Rink, a podcast by hockey bloggers for hockey fans. I'm James Tapeleg Grayley, and in the other corner is my co-host, Tom Luongo. Today, we're going to be talking with Greg Wyshynski. We're going to be talking about season previews and his favorite team, the New Jersey Devils. And we're going to tell you exactly who we think we are and what we're doing here. All that's coming up on the first episode of The Rink. So welcome to The Rink. I'm James Grayley, and I'm known on the internet a little bit as Tapeleg. I write a small little blog called jerseysandhockeylove.com. I mostly cover the Colorado Avalanche. I've had it going for about 2 years now. I've always wanted to start a podcast, and luckily enough, I was hooked up with Tom Luongo to start doing this, and things just clicked a little bit. Tom, why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Well, James, my name's Tom Luongo. I used to write for Saber-Rattling. It was the blog I started right out after the lockout ended. I was so happy the lockout ended, I had to get back into blogging, and I wanted to talk about my Buffalo Sabres. Currently, I write for FanHouse with guys like Jess Galbez and James Myrtle and Eric McElwain. So that's a really cool gig. Like James, it's doing this kind of radio thing is something I've always been intrigued by. So I brought it up to Eric. I thought it would be a good idea that we try something like this. He put James and I together, and it's been interesting as we've tried to put this thing, try to get this thing off the ground. So far,
especially over a long distance, since I happen to be in Kansas City this week and you are in Florida.
Yes, I'm stationed in Florida, and you're all over the place. So it has been an interesting thing. Our goal here at The Rink, and I mean all puns intended, are of course intended. Our goal here is to do hockey and really nothing else but, and without any of the filler or any of the garbage, even though we're going to fill for about the next 4 or 5 minutes as we give you our philosophy or manifesto, as it were. Our goal here is really to try and bring a voice, a physical voice, to the written words that you guys have been reading around the blogosphere, the hockey blogosphere, for the past 5 or 6 years now. As James said in the opening, we've got the Puck Daddy himself, or he's not really the Puck Daddy now, is he?
No, he likes to be called the editor of Puck Daddy.
Right, he's not really.
But it seems so fitting.
It really does, and Greg is just—he's just going to have to get over it. I just think it's a good idea that he's the Puck Daddy. Give me some sugar, baby. I get to see him saying it too. It's just really kind of funny. We really wanted to bring a more personal touch to what's going on in our hockey blogosphere, which has just exploded in the last couple of years. It's really quite fascinating, and
one of the things that I've always wanted to do with talking to other bloggers is find out more about their teams and the like. And while I know a lot about my team and Tom knows a lot about his team, we don't know everything there is to know about the rest of the league. It's a big league with a lot of players and the like. And the reason I started hockey blogging is because I wanted to have something to say about my team, and I was interested in what other people had to say about theirs. So what we want to do on this podcast is bring more people in, talk to a lot of people about their teams and about their what they blog about and why they started blogging about their teams in the first place. Right. So throughout the episodes that we do of The Rink, we want to have the voice of the rest of the blogosphere out there, and bringing Greg Wyshynski on for this is great. Currently one of the most popular bloggers out there, great writer, excellent hockey man, and knows his stuff. And he knows so much more about hockey, and about, after having to do so many season previews this year, so much more about the rest of the league than I could ever hope to.
Now, you're right. It's true. He's got that full time gig, and it's really kind of cool. For me, it was never really about that. But it's going to be fascinating. I'm hoping it's going to be really fascinating to listen to, why we all do, what drove us to do this stuff. I think it's really fascinating. It'll be really interesting to see how that plays out and the differences in the responses that we're going to get from people who, who was it that, wanted to become a professional writer? Someone like Greg, this was his goal in life. And for other people, it's just simply to be a part of a larger community online. and but happen to have the talent of being able to communicate that well. And I'm going to be really, you know, I don't know about you, James, but I'm really going to be interested to hear what various people have to say about that stuff. So we're going to do, so our format's going to be something along these lines every week. We're going to have approximately 20 to 25 minutes every week where we're going to have a variety of basic features. In the first period, we're going to go over what's happened in the league. We'll do 5 to 7 minutes worth of news. And usually in the second period, we will have commentary, either a conversation between myself and James about certain things. I will have a segment called Tom's 2 Minutes of Hate. And then we'll finish up with an interview with a specific blogger or two, depending on the events of the week. The goal there would be to have a good 7 to 10 minute interview, getting some good information about a specific team that you wouldn't normally get, leveraging that blogger's specific advantage about their chosen passion. And then we're also going to have a sister podcast published every week, depending on the blogger themselves, where we sit down and just have a kind of a Charlie Rose style sit down talk with them about why it is that they blog, you know, why is it that they, you know, love hockey and all of those things, and all that's just to help, you know, bridge that gap between the written word and the person themselves. So is that about cover it, James?
I think that about covers it. Why exactly did you start why did you start saber rattling when you did?
I started saber rattling because I couldn't not start saber rattling. I originally had decided that I wanted to do a group blog with my mates over at HF Boards, and I thought that there were so many great people over there with so many great ideas that I thought it would be fantastic if we could pick individual people and have them, you know, focus on various aspects of the Buffalo Sabres and do a good group blog. I had been blogging previous to that at a personal blog for a couple of years, and I shut that down and started up Saber Rattling. I thought it was a great idea to do that. What happened was I just couldn't get anybody else to really commit to the idea of it, and so I just kind of did it myself, and it, you know, it just kind of grew over time. And you know, why did you start the Jerseys and Hockey Love, James?
I remember I had a whole lot of thoughts about hockey, and I had only one person really to talk to about hockey and what I thought and get other opinions. The only other opinion I had was one person. And I remember I started, Vancouver Canucks op-ed by Alana, who now writes Canucks and Beyond. I started commenting on it, and we had a little bit of back and forth, and I thought, boy, this is going to be fun. Maybe I should start one. And I did, not knowing and not having any idea of what kind of commitment it really was, right. and how much work it was really going to be.
Right.
And yeah. 2 years later, I'm still going, boy, I don't know if I should be doing this or not.
Well, I mean, that if you're still asking that question, then that's probably means you should be doing it.
Well, it certainly keeps it entertaining. At least I'm not saying, well, I'm the one and only voice of hockey, which I think so many mainstream media people do, or so many mainstream media outlets do, and say your only choice for one of the best things I found about the hockey blogosphere is that there is not only one choice, and I can constantly find out exactly how wrong I am. Whether it's when I say something wrong or type something wrong, or just an opinion is something that I thought and about another team that I was way off base about. And the hockey blogosphere brings all of that to me. And hopefully throughout the course of this podcast, the hockey blogosphere can bring that back to us. And I can learn a lot more about the rest of the league, which is important to me. And finding out more about hockey in areas that I'd never pay attention to in the first place.
Right. I'm in that same boat, right? Especially as I get, I don't know about you, but as I get older, I have less and less time to really spend being a general hockey fan, and I really have to focus on, I have just enough time to follow, you know, one team or one or two teams well, and then everything else has to fall by the wayside. I just don't literally have the time anymore. So it's one of the great things about, you know, we're looking at this almost as, you know, an opportunity to, learn from everybody else what's going on out there that we don't normally have time for. So we'll set aside a couple of hours every week to get caught up on Columbus or Nashville or Detroit or whomever that, whomever we're going to, you know, talk to that week, and hope that, you know, we can, you know, really disseminate some good information to people and have a good time.
I think it's pretty hard to be an hockey fan in America, or at least a casual hockey fan. You have to make a little bit of an effort to go out and find various places to get the information about the hockey. Sure. It's not like, it's not spoon fed to you, and there's not so many media outlets out there that all you have to do is wait for the right time or turn the channel and you're going to find hockey. As an American hockey fan, yeah, or a hockey fan in America, there are so many good places to find hockey on the internet and good hockey writing on the internet. And most of that for me comes from the blogosphere.
Absolutely. I agree completely.
Well, if there's one thing that Tom likes to do, it's rant. And earlier in the week, we recorded what we like to call Tom's 2 Minutes of Hate. This week, we're talking about season previews, since the season is starting, and not just season previews for your team, but season previews for many teams.
A new hockey season is nearly upon us, and like an annual version of the cicadas chirping to get someone's attention after a lazy summer of eating, the ritual of the season preview is performed by all and sundry in hockey punditry. There are endless riffs on 30 teams and 30 days to fill in the time between the feeding frenzy of the opening of free agency and the opening of training camps. Anything to keep the people habituated to perusing their favorite sites, I guess. Well, after years of both reading and producing these things, I say feh. If there's one thing I've come to realize since becoming a hockey blogger is that most people's opinions on your team are close to worthless. And that most especially includes my opinion about your team. From what I can gather, few even like doing these things. Most of them I read are a cursory glance at the team under scrutiny, no meat on the bones, no matter how hard the writer tries. And to be generous, I do believe many of them really try. But the truth is, following one team well is a full-time job. What has made sports blogging successful is exactly what is wrong with season previews. Bloggers are fans with so much love and dedication to their team/sport that they use their spare time after work, in between changing diapers, to figure out ways to communicate their observations about their teams with anyone who will listen. It's that passion which gives them the insights to produce great work, the font of specific knowledge from which to apply their craft and make their scribblings that much more relevant to the rest of us. They write about their team because, like all good writers, they can't not write about it. And it's from there that all good work comes. I've noted, with some sadness and no lack of chagrin, actually, my own lack of enthusiasm for blogging, and by extension hockey, the minute blogging for me became a job/obligation rather than a passion. And to me, season previews covering anything other than your own team can't convey the sense of intimacy that's required to do great work. Now, I'm not talking about our opinions on the teams at the top and bottom of the league. We all know Detroit's going to do well this year, regardless of their final place in the standings. It's the teams in the middle ground, i.e. most of them, that demand a close look at where they are and where they possibly could go. There are so many variables to consider when thinking about an upcoming season that trying to quantify that into a potential playoff seeding or a number of games a team should win is really an impossible task in my mind. The error bars are just too big, man, and you know, we're just talking to hear ourselves talk ultimately. So while, for example, I feel comfortable discussing the Sabres, even I can't comprehend where they're going to go this year. The best I can do is identify what questions we should be asking about them while waiting for the curtain to go up on opening night. So for me, in the end, blogging should always be focused on watching that story unfold and charting it, rather than attempting some lame prediction about how it's all going to end up. Tom.
Well, Tom and I are lucky enough to have somebody want to talk to us a little bit about season previews and blogging in general. Greg Wyshynski is the editor of Puck Daddy's blog over at Yahoo Sports. He's been doing 30 team previews, and he's been doing it in an interesting, unique style as a yearbook, kind of a high school yearbook look to them and feel to them. And they've actually been really entertaining read. And we talked to him on Monday about
all the season previews that he's been doing. And we were lucky enough that somebody like Greg would come along and listen to us rank amateurs, as you can tell by my first question. Let's talk about season previews for a minute. The season's starting up. It's starting up, of course, in Europe, which is a whole nother topic. But, Greg, you've been covering all 30 teams. One more to go, I believe. And how are you able, basically, to cover 30 different teams? Do you feel like you're able to expert enough, or what? How do you bring a perspective to 30 different teams at the beginning of the season?
Well, it helps when you have hack comedy jokes that you can fall back on, like Chris Pronger jokes about, you know, people trying to burn his kid's crib in Edmonton, and you know, the old reliable Keith Kachuk fat jokes from St. Louis, and that kind of stupid
stuff. So you're
stuff.
Going, I mean, to the well.
To have those as your foundation really kind of makes it for a good preview. But I mean, the other part of it is I never want to do these things half-heartedly. I really do want to understand the team as best I can before writing about it. Because the biggest pet peeve I have in previews, and sometimes it's due to when it's published, but if I'm reading a preview and the guy writing it says that a player may play a role on a team and that player has been traded, released, or died, you know, kind of thing, it just irks the hell out of me. It just completely devalues the entire thing for me. So I wanted to at least have a cursory knowledge of every team that I previewed, and that, you know, part of that is sort of getting a sense of what's happened in the off season. It's reading as much as you can about what they're doing in the preseason, to get a sense of, you know, line combinations and who's fighting for more time and that kind of thing. So it's a lot of research, and that's part of the reason why the whole thing takes so damn long. Besides the fact that I've decided on this format that, you know, also involves my completely inadequate Photoshop skills.
They're much better than mine.
I have no Photoshop skills beyond double clicking the icon, and that's about it.
So well, how much?
I figured out how to make the photos that I was downloading look like high school yearbook photos, which I thought was a major accomplishment for my completely remedial Photoshop skills. So that whole awesome thing worked out well, I think, and I'm pretty happy with it.
I thought that Marty Brodeur actually looks pretty good with the little mohawk there. That's
okay. The Ryan Smith photo is awesome, by the way. He really does look like he's still in high school, actually. Other than his nose wandering across his face.
Well, and that possibly could be the only picture of Lou Lamoriello ever "quote unquote" laughing.
Yeah, I know. The aesthetics to the previews were something that I was. You know, really pleased about. I've gotten feedback from a lot of people just saying thank you for doing this in a different way than the usual thing. And if that's, you know, if they didn't appreciate my expert analysis, that's at least something that I can hang my hat on, is that people seem to get some enjoyment.
I can say this, Greg, I may or may not agree with what I've seen, which is fair. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be. I actually think all of your high school yearbook rundowns were actually better than the ones done that I've read by Ross McKeon, which is really kind of annoying.
Ross and I had this sort of strange radio DJ team thing going on, where like the people, like when you listen to a team of two different people on the radio, there's always callers that try to divide and conquer. They're always very complimentary to one guy in the team, and then they dismiss the other guy. It's this thing where now, like, people who read Puck Daddy have been like chiming in with you know, you should have Ross's job, or I like this better than what Ross did. And it's so uncomfortable, because we really do completely different things. I mean, the guy is a hardcore veteran shoe leather hockey writer, and I'm, you know, not.
I know. Honestly, I read his Buffalo preview and I went, okay, so we spent all of 10 minutes on this before he started writing it. And it's actually what got me off on my rant this year about why people just don't get it. And it's one of the things that this is, in my mind, this is why we have team bloggers, and why I'd much rather read Pension Plan Puppets for the most part than read Al Strachan. code the drunk Strachan. Because Julian's going to give me a bunch of, he's going to give me a much better rundown. They may have access to the locker room. Now, we have an even worse situation in, say, Buffalo, where all the guys at the Buffalo News have so pissed off the Sabres, they have no more access to the Sabres than we do. So Jerry Sullivan and Bucky Gleason and John Vogel, they don't have any access. They never know what Bergier is going to do. They're reporting on this. The only thing they're getting differently is that they're going to probably find out just before we do. And if they're Johnny on the spot, they'll actually get a post up first. But that's it.
But what's interesting about what you just said is I got a taste of what mainstream guys deal with when it comes to their audience and to the blogosphere. I mean, because I know when I'm writing the Columbus Blue Jackets, preview, that there are Columbus Blue Jackets bloggers. There's not a whole hell of a lot of them, but they're definitely out there that know the team better than I do. So if I don't have my facts straight as far as the guys that are competing to be Rick Nash's center this year, well, I'm going to get called out on it, whether it's on my blog or on another blog. So there is that intrinsic pressure when you are trying to be a general hockey writer and do all of these previews, that you want to be able to make sure that you know what you're talking about, or else you're going to get torched. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I think it's what we try to do to the mainstream guys, and it keeps you on your toes, you know?
I guess I get a little of this having to work for Fanhouse and having to produce all five of them last year for the Northeast Division, and I went back and reread some of them, and I'm like, oh my god, dude, bad, and especially I think it was like the Boston one. I think was just really bad. It was just really horrible. And then I looked at my picks for the division. I'm like, oh. But at the end of the day, for most, I'm hoping that, for the most of us, it's really hard to know and follow all 30 teams and know what's really going on inside all of those teams. And it's just not going to happen.
Well, Greg, you must have learned a lot about it.
It's impossible.
You must have learned a lot.
It's impossible. Oh. But you know what's funny is that in doing this new gig, I guess it's a tribute to the amount of information we have on the blog. People assume that we see everything. I get so many emails saying, I can't believe you haven't written about this yet. And I'll say, this happened 5 minutes ago. it's I guess a tribute to the fact that we have so much info on the blog that people think that we're always going to see things. But people send in tips and then people get indignant about why we haven't written about something when honestly we haven't even seen it published anywhere yet.
Right. Well, nothing is. I think there's nothing, not a tougher crucible in hockey than the HF boards, the individual team forums on HF boards are crazy. And I remember going there first and then thinking I didn't know anything about hockey when I started saber rattling actually. And it's because I've been hanging out with those guys for 4 years and going, I don't know anything. I don't want to get. And you say one thing wrong and they'll torture you for an hour. And we have a good group over in the Buffalo group is really, really good. But man, those guys are tough.
Well, that's the thing about it. I think we're all of a certain age where we remember hockey on the web in a different way than, say, an 18-year-old does. It wasn't always the blogosphere. Before that, you'd go to message boards, or you'd go to Usenet, or you'd go to places like that. And literally, you would just throw down with people if you disagreed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know about you boys, but, back in college, when I was at the University of Maryland and first discovering this glorious invention of Al Gore's, the Internet, I would go on these New Jersey Devils boards, and the Ranger fans would come, and they'd post on the Devils board, and you'd post back, and it was like a schoolyard brawl between you and the other guys.
Classic flame wars. I've been on the Internet. I've been on Usenet since 1987.
It was like Thunderdome. And in a way, I definitely think it helps hone your rhetorical skills get into these debates. But in another way, I mean, if you want a definition of pissing in the wind, you get yourself into an internet fight about hockey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's something that's why I backed away from the message boards after a while simply because, okay, guys, if you have this much to write about this stuff, start your own blog and actually get yourself some recognition as opposed to doing it here on HF and making them advertising money. Really structure think about all your arguments and then structure your work. And more importantly, say it once and get it and let it go. stop, you know, the whole personality thing and message boards are I just find crazy.
It's an epidemic of internet muscles is what it is. And it's always going to be there. And it's there in my comments when people, you know, call me out for things I've written or things that Leahy's written. And it'll always be there. Sometimes it's valid and sometimes it's just, you know, being negative for the sake of being negative.
Well, let me ask you something about your previews. You said that, you know, it's impossible to do previews of 30 teams, not accurately, but really, really well. You must have learned a lot. Was there anything that you learned about about any of the teams out there that really surprised you?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question, actually, because until I actually sat down for my fantasy draft, I didn't realize how much I actually did learn. And it kind of helps you craft, you know, what you think the standings might look like and that sort of thing. I mean, I didn't realize how stacked the Flyers were up front until I really kind of sat down and looked at it. I mean, if you think about the fact that you could have a line in theory where you've got Mike Richards centering for Danny Briere, I mean, that's pretty good because Danny Briere, love him or hate him, can be a 90-point guy in the right situation. And they're loaded for bear in the first couple of those lines. The other thing is you get to kind of see around the league guys that really sort of came on and could be poised for a breakout year. And I think about a guy like David Perrin in St. Louis. You know, here's a guy who had a really solid rookie campaign and you know, put up some impressive points per game totals. And, you know, if they follow through and they put him on a line with some of the point-producing guys like Kariya or Tkachuk in St. Louis, and you know, he could easily become this year's big surprise in that team. See, you get to see these things all over the league, but mostly I kind of like seeing the potential line combinations that some of these teams are throwing out right now. I mean, you look at the Rangers right now and the tantalizing tease of potentially putting Gomez and Drury on the same line or a Naslin, Gomez, Zhirinov line. There are so many interesting possibilities right now on some of these teams in a jigsaw puzzle kind of way. That's the stuff that really, as a fantasy hockey guy, kind of really, like, you know, I don't want to say turns me on. That's a little too erotic. it makes me interested.
I volunteered to do the Ottawa preview, and mostly because I wanted to see what was actually up, and it would force me to spend 24 hours looking at the Senators without, you know, wanting to puke. And I realized that, you know, and I popped around the blogosphere to do it, and I realized that they really do have a very solid core of forwards on that team, and I think they're going to actually put out four very solid lines all the way from top to bottom. Two very good scoring lines now that they're going to put Alfredson with Vermette and Kelly, and move Fisher down to play with the two goons, Neil and Brutu. Can't believe they actually went and got Brutu to go with Neil, but there it is. And they have a really solid core of, I think it's a really, really good balance all the way through their lineup. They're going to be annoying to play against this year. I think they are.
But at the same time, I mean, I looked at Ottawa and I see an annoying team. I see a team that could be very, very good. I'm not enamored with their defense. Their goaltending, of course, is now legendary for being underwhelming. But I think the way that I go about looking at a season preview, and by that I mean, you know, where some of these teams are going to wind up finishing, is I really start to kind of look at how many teams each division is going to give you for the postseason. And in the Eastern Conference, I think that the Atlantic is sending four again. I really do. I just think that the Rangers are going to find a balance of chemistry. I think the Devils are going to be in the playoffs until Brodeur's legs fall off. The Penguins are never going to be as bad as people think they are going to be with the bridesmaid thing going on. And the Flyers, I think, are going to win the division. So then you look at the Atlantic, and I just don't see how they don't send two teams by virtue of the fact that the rest of the teams in that division are so poopy. And then you look at the Northeast, and you know Montreal's winning that division, most likely.
And then you're saying
to yourself, okay, well, now you got Boston, and you got Ottawa, maybe you got Buffalo. What do you got? Because honestly, I hear what you're saying about Ottawa, but I think Boston's a little bit better this year. So all of a sudden, you're saying to yourself, even though I really respect the fact that Ottawa's stacked, I don't like their goaltending, I don't like their coach. Maybe they miss it this year.
It's possible. My attitude was, if one of the kids doesn't step up to anchor the second pair with Kuba, so that Smith can play the third pair and kill penalties, they're in trouble on defense. Because asking Jason Smith to log number 4 minutes at this point in time in this league, I think, is a bad idea.
And then
what do they have on the fifth and sixth pair? And then, you know, God forbid Phillips gets injured or Volchenkov gets injured. They're done. They could easily be in, you know, in having to try and win every game 2-1.
How many times have we seen teams split up the big line and then all of a sudden throw them back together again in a fit of panic?
Yeah, well, that's and how many times has Ottawa done that?
Exactly.
I mean, let's be realistic here. So, yeah, I mean, it becomes a very interesting problem, and they have to get. I think they may gel or they may not, and you have the same questions in Buffalo. Obviously, top to bottom, there's 4 or 5 guys that have to perform in order for that team to really, you know, to really have any chance of excelling. And if they don't, then, you know, thankfully they're all in their contract years, which is the only good thing going for them. All the guys who have big questions, they're all in their contract years, they're all playing for their last big contract. So that's the reason I say I think Buffalo is a playoff team this year, because I think guys like Finnegan off and Spotcheck and Connolly and even Kotelik to a lesser extent are all going to be playing for their contracts. Otherwise, they're not going to be, you know, and that's what's going to give them that extra 5 or 10% that'll get them over the hump.
That's a great point, actually, because you go back to writing these previews, you know, in trying to figure out exactly what some of these players across the league are going to do, you know, not having seen them play 50 games last year, because, you know, it's humanly impossible to have done such a thing.
Exactly.
You start to try to figure out, you know, who's singing for their supper. You know, who's going to be the Verbata this year, where all of a sudden the guy who's never scored more than 20 goals puts up, you know, 27 or whatever he put up with for the Coyotes last year.
Or Brian Campbell.
Yeah, there you go. And what's amazing to me in doing some research, actually for a piece on Solani I wrote today, do you realize that the Anaheim Ducks have, I think, 15 unrestricted free agents next year? 15.
Wow.
The entire defense outside of Chris Pronger is unrestricted next year. And when you look at that, you say to yourself, all right, well, this is a team that clearly knows, you know, if the general manager does what we think he does after this season and goes to Toronto, this is a team that knows that this is the last hurrah. Because you don't know if Niedermeyer's back, you don't know what, you know, how many of these unrestricted guys are going to be back as well. So that's an incredible motivating factor. Those guys know exactly what the contract status of the guy in the locker next to him, you know, is. So that is a motivating factor to me. It tells me that the Ducks are going to be a hell of a lot better than people think, just by virtue of the fact that this is it for guys like Niedermeyer.
Right.
You know?
Right. All I was going to say is, and that's part of the thing that's kind of missing when you try and cover 30 teams in 30 days. My rant really wasn't about, it was about more like ESPN stuff and the stuff at TSN and stuff like that, where they're going to go and they're going to give us they're going to mail in their whatever they get paid for one of those things. They're going to mail in their preview, and they're not going to think about any of these issues, these little things. What potential line combinations? Whose contract is up for, you know, who's coming up the pipeline to push them or, you know, or whatever? And that's the thing that's really frustrating as a dialed in fan of a particular team.
Well, it just goes beyond it just goes beyond who's going to score the goals. Or who the goalie is, you know. That's why I as much as the as it was a pain in the ass to write, the structure of the previews that we had on Puck Daddy this year were solid, because I like the fact that we split up the different facets of the team. You know, it's just as important to the success of the team to know who is going to be dropping his gloves to police the little guys, as it is who the second pairing defenseman is. And if you're you know, Tampa Bay right now, for all of the fireworks that they have offensively, and all the new guys that they have, and they've got some rough guys up there, I mean, their primary enforcer, if David Krejci doesn't make the team, is Shane O'Brien. He's protecting Vinny and Stamkos. You know, one of your best physical defensemen. I mean, they don't got Andre Roy on that team anymore. you know.
Right.
So it's these little things that you start to pick up when you're really kind of breaking down a team. And I think you're absolutely right. I think a lot of the mainstream previews are annoying in the sense that they're all surface. They're all, you know, cut and paste from last year, and let's, you know, Mad Lib the names.
Right.
And that's what kind of makes them frustrating.
Well, let's take a look at one of the things that Tom and I always talk about is how little we actually know outside of our teams. And kind of that's kind of the point of the season preview thing is that, you know, there's so many people trying to just kind of generalize about teams. But you're a New Jersey Devils fan. Now, the only things that I know about the Devils really is Marty Brodeur, Steve Madden, Lou Lamoriello, and Patrick Elias.
You mean John Madden?
What? Or Tom Madden.
John Madden.
Yeah. Steve Madden makes shoes.
Steve Madden makes shoes. Hey, guess what's getting edited? I'll just leave that in because I'm an idiot. So obviously I don't know much about the New Jersey Devils outside of 3 out of 4 people that I thought I knew about. So tell us about the Devils. What are you seeing this year?
I'm encouraged. I think one of the shrewdest free agent signings this offseason was the Brian Ralston signing, only because he's a guy who understands what's demanded of you as a Devil because he was a former Devil, and right. because he allows the other pieces of this lineup offensively to kind of fall in different places. You know, if you put Ralston up on a top line with Patrick Elias and Brian Gionta, well, all of a sudden you're shifting Elias back to the wing where he's a lot more comfortable. And maybe you get Gionta going again, because that's a guy, you know, who popped up in 40 a couple of years back. So, he's a decent offensive player. It's just a matter of trying to get him in the right spot. So, if that's your top line, if Elias and Ralston and Gionta is your top line, well, now you've freed up Parisi to go play on a second line and try to make something out of that group. And maybe you put him with Langenbrunner, and maybe you put him with Travis Zajac. And if you do that, all of a sudden you've got Ed and Pandolfo back here again, and they're legendary as far as being a checking line, and things start to fit in your lineup a little bit better. You know, all of a sudden your fourth line, you got Bobby Hulick and Dinas Zubrus on your fourth line, and maybe they can make something happen.
Right.
But again, what it comes down to for the Devils is the same thing that it came down to last year, which is whether or not Brodeur can be good enough to overcome the worst group of defensemen he's ever played behind. And it's not to demean guys like Colin White and Paul Martin, who are solid, you know, quality D-men, but it just speaks to the kind of talent he's had in front of him for the last 15 years. You know, there's nobody right. named Scott on that defense. There's no Ken Danica. There's no Brian Rafalski. I mean, he's trying to make the playoffs with guys like Johnny Oduya playing in front of him. So
right.
if Brodeur can again have the kind of season he had last year and make that defense look better than it is, and the offense can contribute a little bit more than they contributed last season, they'll make the playoffs. I mean, I still have no idea where they'll go, but I think they're good enough to make the playoffs. But again, it's a situation where their cap number is not amenable to them doing a lot of business at the trade deadline. And every single time the Devils have challenged for the Stanley Cup, they've done some business at the trade deadline or bought in some significant talent via a trade. You know, whether it was Jason Arnott or even going back to Neil Broughton back in 95, that's always kind of been the thing they do. So it's a team that I think can contend in their own division, but I'm not quite sure if they're built for the long haul come playoff time.
You mentioned trading at the trade deadline. Do they have any trade bait on the team?
Well, that's the other problem, is that the cupboard's been bare in the minor leagues for quite a long time for this team. This is a team that used to draft in an incredibly efficient and effective way, and also has been able in the past to find diamonds in the rough, guys like Brian Rafalski. I mean, Brian Rafalski may not even be in the NHL today if it's not for Lamoriello going overseas and bringing him back. So. They don't have a lot of pieces in their system that they can move for top level talent, and that's a real issue. But maybe that's for the best, because it kind of says to the team, this isn't going to be getting any better anytime soon, boys. So you got to make this work.
And, you know, if this is going to be, well, how many years does Brodeur have left on his contract?
He's there for a bit, but I mean, he's 37.
Right.
I forget exactly how many years he's got left on his deal, but
I'll check.
But he isn't exactly, you know, he plays a pretty athletic style, and of course that can be detrimental down the road as he gets older.
Well, he already is old.
Well, he's not Dominic Hasek old.
He's not Dominic Hasek old, but no, I know what you're saying, and I mean, the last thing that I said in the Devil's preview is the most obvious thing is, you know, if he's cooked, then they're cooked. I mean, there's just no two ways around it. I mean, you can look around the league, and I don't know if there's another team that has the one man make or break thing that the Devils have with Marty Brodeur. I mean, maybe Vancouver is in the same boat because of Luongo.
Well, do me a favor, Greg. Plug everything that you do.
Well, we write the Puck Daddy blog on Yahoo Sports. You can find it on the Yahoo NHL page by clicking the word blog on the header. And that's about it. I don't have any other gigs beyond that. I mean, I write here or there for, you know, the Hockey News and you know, some other publications. But, I mean, right now it is the editor of the Puck Daddy blog.
Are you going to be on XM Satellite Radio more often? Or?
Oh, yeah. No, I do a couple of different radio hits. I'm on Sirius a couple times a month. I think the XM thing might be a weekly thing on one of their shows that Jim Boomer Gordon hosts, and we had a good time the last time we were doing it. So, you know, as long as they don't ask me, like, you know, the best radio interviews are the ones that we've just had, where we talk about things that are interesting, and it's not trying to have me on and asking me about the left-handed defenseman on the Thrashers power play, because I don't know. Right. You know, if we're talking about things about, like, who the players are dating, you know, or what they're driving, or who's a dummy, you know, these are things that I'm more comfortable with rather than things that involve numbers, for example.
Greg, you rant nearly as well as I do, and that's high praise, sir. So, I know on behalf of myself and James, I really appreciate you coming on. And
no sweat, man.
And hopefully we'll, at some point in the future, if we run out of the guests, then we'll have you on again.
Well, thanks for listening to The Rink. You can find us at www.rinkpodcast.com. It's www.rinkpodcast.com. And if you have something to say, or if you're just pissed off at Tom, you can always call us and leave a message at 845-704-7465. That's 845-704-RINK, R-I-N-K.
Or if you just have anything else you'd like to say to us, the email address, once again, is rink@rinkpodcast.com. I'd like to thank Greg Wyshynski for being such a great interview for our inaugural sailing of this boat. I'd like to thank James for doing such a great job on the edit and everything else. So I think that's it for our first episode. What do you think, James?
I think that's great. And if anybody else out there in the blogosphere, the hockey blogosphere, wants to chat with us a little bit, make sure that you drop us an email and we'll talk about getting you on. We're interested in hearing what you have to say as well as what we have to say too. So thanks a lot for listening to The Rink, and thanks for putting up with us.
Take care, guys. We'll see you next week.